The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had made an introduction to a look at the Big Bang Theory. We had looked at a brief description of it. Somewhere, as I mentioned, I think the first program, this is the kind of thing that you can go on and on and on into great detail about, and this is not the place to do that. This is not the kind of a program to do that in. But my purpose is to help believers who may not have either a background in sciences or the opportunity of their own study and reading and thinking about it, to understand. Whether you understand all the stuff that's being said or not is not the point. The point is that there is legitimate objection to the current models that are used by science and scientists. And if you get nothing more from what we've been doing, perhaps our time will be helpful. It is not my desire to bore you to tears about it. It is my desire to help you understand what I have just said, that there are legitimate bases of objecting to those things that are presented as being true. It is true that they exist, but to look on them as the actual acceptable scientific view is something very, very different. Now, some other comments about the Big Bang, and then we will get on to another subject. And if some of you are tiring of this, why, we will be done shortly. And I would simply crave your and beg your indulgence as we do this. Now, we had looked at a comment by a man by the name of Alan Guth earlier, in a different context, I think. And I want to go back. We on the program last time, we had looked at his comments. One, so to produce a universe by the standard Big Bang description, one must start with an energy of 10 billion universes. And then another statement in which he described that idea as the ultimate free lunch. Now, that may not make sense to you. And to help, let's go to another article that Guth and a man by the name of Steinhardt did. This was published in the Scientific American, May of 1984. And it was an article which was entitled The Inflationary Universe, and it may help you understand that. This whole thing has been an attempt to at least look at some of the scientists' response to the question, how can you have nothing give rise to something? Where has our universe come from? And for those who want to reject God as creator, they have to turn to something else. There's a verse I believe, 2 Timothy that comes to mind here. They shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. Whenever you've come face to face with some truth and you reject that truth, then the only thing left for you is a lie of some kind. And the truth in this instance happens to be the truth of God creating our universe. Now, you come have a person who comes face to face with that truth and rejects it, chooses to reject it, turns away from it. The only thing left is a lie of some kind. And that principle, I think, is worth noting in passing. Now, let's look at this article, the article that was entitled The Inflationary Universe. And there are two statements that I want you to listen to. First, quote, from an historical point of view, probably the most revolutionary aspect of the inflationary model, this is the Big Bang, their differences, and that's not something I want to sort out. That's what they have in mind here. From a historical point of view, probably the most revolutionary aspect of the inflationary model is the notion that all the matter and energy in the observable universe may have emerged from almost nothing, end quote. The nothing, again, is this head-sized lump thing that contains all the matter of the universe. Now, if that's not starting with nothing and going to something, it comes very close to it. This is the reason for Guth's reference in another article to the idea of a free lunch. Here is the pinhead-sized collection of all the matter in the universe that explodes and gives rise to the whole universe. Particularly since that the notion of the pinhead-sized lump is a speculative assumption. There is no basis in science or current experience that would indicate that as a likelihood. And by the way, it is my personal opinion, God didn't create using a big bang. You go to the scripture and read what he describes there, and this is not what you see. And there are some creationists who are attempting to incorporate the big bang, to harmonize the big bang with the account in scripture. And if you're going to accept the scripture at face value, it simply is not possible to do that. So this is the reason for the almost nothing. Now, later on the same page, this comment is made, quote, "The inflationary model of the universe provides a possible mechanism by which the observed universe could have evolved from an infinitesimal region. It is then tempting to go one step further and speculate that the entire universe evolved from literally nothing," end quote. Now, this infinitesimal region, I don't like the word evolved, obviously, which the observed, what all the universe we see around us, the observed universe, could have evolved from an infinitesimal region, this tiny pinhead size, pinpoint sized lump that produced the entire universe. And this, if it is not, in fact, going from nothing to something, it certainly approaches that idea very closely. This is the point that I want you to get from these comments that we have been looking at here. Now, there is another comment that I would like for us to spend a little bit of time looking at. This one is made by a man by the name of Lerner, Eric J. Lerner. Kobe confounds the cosmologist. The Kobe, again, is the cosmic background explorer. This was published in Aerospace America, March of 1990. Quote, "Most cosmologists," this is his most, not mine, I do not know. First place, I don't know how many cosmologists there are. And secondly, I've not taken a poll of them. So I don't know whether most of them agree with this idea or not. I suspect probably they would. But at any rate, listen to the quote. Quote, "Most cosmologists believe the universe came into being 15 or 20 billion years ago in a tremendous explosion they call the Big Bang," end quote. Another statement in the article, quote, "Theorists hope that these traces would be detected by sensitive instruments of COBE, Cosmic Background Explorer, a satellite launched last November," this would be in 89, "launched last November by NASA. To their surprise, however, the preliminary data from COBE announced in January show none of these hypothetical relics of past explosions." Now, I've got to interrupt this. I have seen on public television videos in which people have often made the comment, oh, we are looking at the origin of the universe. You see this in newspaper articles, magazine articles, that scientists have pushed back. They are actually getting information from the birth of the universe. Now, this simply is not true. Whether the scientists who are making those comments understand that or not, I'm certain many of them do. Now, whether they all do or not, I don't know. But it is not true to say that the information gotten from COBE or some of the other things that they've worked with is dealing with the origin of the universe, the birth of the universe. Or they will sometimes, we're almost back to, we're viewing almost the birth of the universe. Well, again, I say that simply is not true. Now back to the quote. "There now seems no way to reconcile the predictions in any version of the Big Bang with the reality of the universe that we observe." Let me repeat that. "There now seems no way to reconcile the predictions of any version of the Big Bang with the reality of the universe that we observe. No way to get from a perfectly smooth Big Bang to the imperfect, lumpy universe we see today." As one COBE scientist, George Smoot of the University of California at Berkeley, put it, "Using forces we now know, you can't make the universe we now know," end quote. Now, my point in having us consider this is simply that here are statements by scientists themselves who are working in these programs, who are disagreeing with the idea of the Big Bang. Now, they are certainly much better informed in this subject than I am, and they are in a position to be knowledgeable about the what is and is not possible with it. And here you have people working in the program who say that the information they're getting back is not consistent with the idea of a Big Bang. Now, if you know nothing more about all we've talked about than this, it ought to give you sufficient reason to pause and give some thought to some of the claims that we are seeing rather regularly. Now, there was an article by a man by the name of Edward P. Tryon. He published the article in the New Scientist, Volume 101, March 8, 1984. The article was entitled, Who Made the World? This gentleman is a professor of physics at Hunter College and at the college, City College in New York City, C-U-N-Y, CUNY. Now, there are several comments. I will go through them there. The last one is the one, however, that sums things up that I want you to be sure you understand. Quote, in 1973, I proposed that our universe had been created spontaneously from nothing, ex nihilo creation, as the result of established principles of physics. This proposal variously struck people as preposterous, enchanting, or both. I would put myself in the first group, I think, preposterous. That the universe we see could have been created from the processes that we see regularly. The reason I would take issue with that is that the processes we see are degenerative processes, and degenerative processes cannot give any sensible picture of how something came into existence, as this gentleman proposed. Another quote, so my proposal of creation ex nihilo was accompanied by a prediction that our universe is finite, hence closed. And again, his picture, he is picturing then simply a large universe, but a finite one, and in that sense is closed. It doesn't go forever. There is some limits to it, some edges to it. Again, time is catching up with us, and we're not going to be able to finish the quotes that we have that I want us to look at. But at any rate, what the man is saying simply is that he theorized that the processes that we can observe in nature would be sufficient to create the universe. And as soon as you hear that, you ought to understand why a great many people, Christians and non-Christians, are immensely skeptical about it.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.